Welcome to episode 644 of the Entertainment 2.0 podcast, brought to you by thedigitalmediazone.com. I'm Josh Pollard, and this is the show that puts you in control of your favorite shows, movies, music, and games. This week, another solo Josh episode. Unfortunately, no Richard this time, but hopefully he'll be back next time. We'll see. Hopefully that works out. Another thing that we don't have to share this week is feedback. So if you'd like to send us some for next week, our email address is entertainment20@thedigitalmediazone.com. And also, if you've just been trying to use the contact form on the website over at www.thedigitalmediazone.com, it was kind of broken. Richard fixed it. So thank you to the listener who reached out and told us that it was broken, and thanks to Richard for fixing it for us. So also, if you are watching this on YouTube, then you can leave feedback by just leaving a comment down below. And if you are watching on YouTube, please click that subscribe button, like the post. You know what to do when it comes to watching things on YouTube. We appreciate it. All the rest of our contact information I will share at the end of the show, and of course, it's over in the show notes at the website. So since we don't have any feedback this week, let's get into the news. So starting off with an update on Hulu and Disney Plus. So last fall, Disney completed their purchase of Hulu. They now own it. And they announced last fall that they would eventually eventually bring Hulu content into the Disney Plus app experience. And they said they would do it by the end of March. And I'm recording this on March 27th, just about the end. And it's now publicly available. The beta of this has come to an end. You can now watch Hulu content inside of the Disney Plus app. So what does that actually mean? Well, if you're used to the Disney Plus app, then you know when you launch it, right across the top, there is a row of tiles for the different types of content available within the app. Now there's one at the end for Hulu, so you can go straight to Hulu content that way. You can also just search for a show, and all of the Hulu shows that are available will show up in your search results, so you can find The Amazing Race or the new Shogun series. They're all right there inside of Disney Plus. It sounds great for the most part, right? Like, it's one less app that you need, but only maybe, because not everything that's available inside of the standalone Hulu app is available inside of the Disney Plus app. So most shows will be, and we haven't been able to find a list that says what shows or movies won't be in the Disney Plus app. But we know that some features aren't there yet. So if you've been watching The Amazing Race on Hulu and you're somewhere in the middle of season 31 and you want to start watching it on Disney Plus, you can, but your watch history has not been migrated over to the Disney Plus app. So Disney Plus doesn't know what you've already watched. So you're going to have to manually figure out where you were in the Hulu app, go over to Disney Plus, start watching the correct episode there. And then from then on out, Disney Plus tracks those things. It's just that the watch status is not synchronized between Disney Plus and Hulu right now. Another thing that you might need to keep the Hulu app around for is if you're also a subscriber to Hulu Plus Live TV. The Live TV service is, of course, Hulu's cable TV replacement service. I want to say that's roughly $65, $70 a month for that service. If you want to watch Hulu Plus Live TV, you still have to go to the Hulu app for that. And Disney hasn't announced any plans to change that. There's also some things that have been in the Hulu app for a few months now that aren't in the Disney Plus app. Last year, Hulu integrated some of the ESPN Plus content inside of the app. So I have all three of these through the bundle. And when I launch the Hulu app, I get to see all of the hockey games that are available to watch right now. That's not in Disney Plus yet. So I would still have to use either Hulu or what I would typically actually do and just use the ESPN Plus app for that. But if you're trying to decrease the total number of apps that you use and you do watch a lot of Disney Plus and Hulu content, well, now you can just use Disney Plus for that. The other benefit that I've seen to this is I regularly forget what's even on Hulu Plus because we never watch it. And we go so long without watching Hulu that I always forget why it is that we don't watch it. Like, I always just assume in my head, well, it's obviously because there's nothing on Hulu that we want to watch. But that's not true. The real reason is because it basically does not work on my NVIDIA Shield TV device. I have to imagine this is not a widespread problem, but it's been a problem for me for years. I think it's literally been a problem for years. And it basically just, you try to watch a video and then you get an error and you basically just can't watch it. There is a weird workaround that I found that works where if I start a video in the Hulu app on my phone and then cast to the Shield, it works. But that's dumb and frustrating and annoying, and I'm never going to tell my family that that's how they need to control Hulu. So tonight I did have the opportunity to try to see if it's a problem with Hulu's video services directly or just the app, and went into the Disney Plus app, fired up an episode of The Amazing Race from Hulu, and it worked. So my family will be happy that they finally have an easy way of watching Hulu content. And frankly, maybe I'll give some of these new shows like Shogun a try because I can watch them easily on my TV now. Our other video news story for this week is NBC and Peacock have announced some new features coming for their coverage of the Summer Olympics coming up in just a couple of months. And these sound pretty good. For years and years and years, we've had people complain about all of the problems related to watching the Olympics, especially when they're in other countries. The timing can be difficult. If you're only watching on like broadcast television, then you're stuck just watching whatever they decide to show you at the time. And oftentimes it's tape delayed, so the results have been spoiled. Peacock is going all out this year. So if you subscribe to Peacock, you're going to have access to over 5,000 hours of Olympic coverage over the 2 weeks of the games. If you do the math, there's not 5,000 hours in 2 weeks. It would take you longer, so a lot longer. But what that does mean is you're going to be able to watch everything that you want to watch, and you're going to have a lot of different options for the way that you watch it. So the first one is they're going to fully support multi-view this year. And what that means is that you'll be able to watch up to four events at the same time in a way that we've seen in lots of other different video streaming apps. YouTube TV does this. We've talked about it a lot on the show lately. They rolled it out last year for March Madness. Now they've added support for lots of other sports. This makes total sense. You're going to be able to watch four different Olympic events all at the same time. You'll be able to control which one you're hearing the audio from. If there's one that you really want to just focus on, you can select one and make that full screen. It sounds exactly like what you would want from multi-view for the Olympics. Another thing that they're doing is a feature they're calling Peacock Discovery Multi-View. And in this case, it's a more curated multi-view experience where they're still showing you multiple things at once, but it's really focusing on more important events. So maybe it's a medal event or an elimination game in one of the tournaments happening. It could be an Olympian's first time being at the games and they're competing. Like, there's lots of interesting things that could cause them to say, this is an event that we think you might want to watch. And really, I think the closest comparison to this is it's the NFL Red Zone channel for the Olympics. And that sounds really great to me. I like that idea a lot. For someone who, especially for me, the Summer Olympics, not exactly my favorite, mostly because they don't have hockey. They don't have ice hockey. They have field hockey. But I'm an ice hockey guy. That's what I want to see. So I like the Winter Olympics more. But there's still a lot of cool stuff happening in the Summer Olympics. And this sort of experience might be a good way to plug into the Olympics when you want to watch at the end of the day, or maybe you've got it on throughout your day. It could be a really cool way of watching the Olympics. Now, the last one, I think this is another really cool feature they're doing. So they're calling it Peacock Live Actions. And so picture that you're watching one of the typical recordings where it's like a 3-hour block and they're going to focus on one event and then they're eventually going to cut to another one and they're eventually going to cut to another one from that. And in that scenario, like maybe you like the first event, maybe you like the second one, maybe you don't care at all about the third event, but you were really interested in the second one and it wasn't done before switching to the third event. Well, in this scenario, when they go to switch to the next event, you will be prompted with a way of very easily saying, no, don't switch. I want to keep watching this without you having to like dive into the menus, find the right sport, find the event that you're looking to watch, and frankly, potentially missing some of the action. You'll just be able to keep watching the sport that you were watching. And there's got to be some interesting technical work happening behind the scenes to enable that. I think it's really smart. And I think that this, along with that Peacock Discovery multi-view feature, are things that they should really advertise a lot ahead of this, because I think these are two things that will give fans an experience that they want to watch in a way that they've never really been able to watch the Olympics before. So I'm excited for this. You're obviously going to need to subscribe to Peacock to get all of this, but a Peacock subscription, I think, is $9.99 a month. You don't even, you know, it's not like it needs to even continue. The Olympics are 2 weeks and it's done. You could sign up for Peacock, immediately cancel it, have it for the month, and not have to worry about any extra charges on your credit card a month later. So definitely be looking forward to using Peacock for the Olympics this summer. Okay, this week we have just one gaming story to share with you. You know, last week we had a story, it was kind of some bad news about PlayStation and their VR situation, and I wasn't happy to share it because, you know, I'm an Xbox guy. This time, I kind of need to do the opposite. I kind of need to rag on Xbox here a little bit, even though it's good news. So the news is that if you are a Game Pass Ultimate subscriber so that you can use Xbox Cloud streaming to play games, you will now, under certain circumstances, be able to play those games with a keyboard and mouse. Previously, even if you were playing on a computer that has a keyboard and mouse hooked up to it, you had to use an Xbox, a game controller. It doesn't have to be an Xbox controller, but a game controller to play those games through the cloud gaming service. The thing that I'm ragging on them a little bit about is they announced this almost 2 years ago that this would be coming to the service. I can't believe it took them this long to implement. Now, I'm sure that part of it is that, at least the last I heard, the cloud gaming experience was completely driven by essentially racks full of Xbox Series X consoles in cloud data centers. So when you play a game through Xbox or through cloud gaming from Xbox, it is actually playing on an Xbox. And so maybe that's part of the problem, part of the challenge maybe in implementing this, but there are plenty of Xbox console games that support keyboard and mouse already and have for years. So I'm sure it's related, but still, 2 years to get this implemented? Come on, guys. And it's actually not even fully available just yet. So for you to do this right now, you need a couple of things. The first thing is you need to not only, of course, have a Game Pass Ultimate subscription, but also you have to be in the alpha skip ahead ring of the Insider program. And if you have no idea what all of those words mean, then it isn't you, because you have to go through a process of signing up for, essentially, it's the beta channel to test new functionality. And they have multiple levels of that. That's where this alpha skip ahead naming nonsense comes in. That is the earliest release version of this insider program. Those people can do this now. You can do it on a PC using a web browser. You can use Edge or Chrome. Although for this to work, you have to put the browser into full screen mode for some reason. I don't really understand that limitation, but it's a small one. You're probably most of the time playing in full screen anyway. You can also do this, of course, inside of the Xbox app for Windows. It's also a pretty limited subset of games that are supported. Halo Infinite is there, Gears Tactics, Sea of Thieves. There's about a dozen games on this list. Fortnite is also on this list, which kind of makes me a liar about something I just said a minute ago. If you're playing Fortnite, I don't believe you need an Xbox Game Pass Ultimate subscription for that. Fortnite's a free game. I think you can just play it for free on Xbox Cloud Gaming. So I'm excited to see this rolling out. I'm disappointed that it took them almost 2 years to implement this. And the list of games right now is fairly small, but I would expect this to increase rather quickly as they put the finishing touches on this. And typically, when Xbox releases features into this insider program, it doesn't take very long. Like, it's typically, it's measured in weeks, not months, in the amount of time it takes before that feature to roll out to general availability. The other thing that I'll be interested in is, will they support other peripherals? The ones that I'm primarily thinking about, of course, you know me, steering wheels and pedals. The other thing people might want, flight sticks for Microsoft Flight Simulator. Those would be nice to support too, but I know for certain that racing wheels are not supported through cloud streaming, and I'm going to bet that flight sticks aren't either. So hopefully after they get the keyboard and mouse support rolling, they will also add support for some of these other types of devices. Okay, that's it for the news this week. Let's jump into what's going on in my entertainment center. On the gaming side, not really a whole lot of interest. We did not end up playing Pal World last week. We ended up playing some Call of Duty. And as usual, I've played a little bit of NHL. I've been trying to get back to Final Fantasy VII Remake. Also, I really stopped at the wrong time. I stopped at a point in the game where it's basically two back-to-back boss battles with no opportunity to replenish your supplies, like potions and things like that, so I don't have many. It's also been a couple of months since I've really played the game, so I'm jumping into a boss battle with limited supplies and also struggling to remember how to play this game. It was not a smart idea. I need to just power through, beat this boss, and get through this game because it is good and I want to be able to finish it. So that's it for the gaming side. On the TV side, I've now finished The Expanse, made it through season 6. I shouldn't say it like it was a struggle. I really liked it. I'm really glad that Richard convinced me to go back and give The Expanse another try. It was really, really good. I'm definitely going to have to talk with Richard and others who have watched this series about their thoughts on the final season. It feels weird. It feels kind of like they decided halfway through the season that it was going to be the final season because it wraps up cleanly, but there's a whole segment of the show, like a whole new storyline that starts at the beginning of season 6 that they never actually do anything with. And I don't understand that direction, really. If they were going to keep making more seasons, it would totally make sense. But they're not. So I would love to know the backstory of what happened there. But still, if you're into sci-fi, check out The Expanse. It's all on Amazon Prime Video. And I think you're probably going to like it. There is language, there's violence, there's some sexual content. So keep those things in mind. It's fairly dark. It's fairly gritty. It's not that dark and gritty. It's not like Game of Thrones dark and gritty, but probably more so than like Battlestar Galactica. So that's The Expanse. Loved it. Very happy. Now I think I'm going to start Three Body Problem. I loved the books and I'm really excited that it's now the series has launched on Netflix. I know that they released a 30 episode series of this in China, I believe Tencent made it. I always wanted to go and watch that, but like I never really remembered to go and do it. And then frankly, I'm not even entirely sure how to watch that one here in the US. But I'm going to jump into Three Body Problem. I know very little about how they've adapted the book to the show. I kind of just want to go in and see what they do. I'm also curious, there are three books in this series. How many of the books are they trying to cover in this show? I'm not sure. So looking forward to jumping into Three Body Problem on Netflix sometime over the coming days. On the book side, I got Lions of Lucerne back as an audiobook. I was previously reading it, but I got it from the library and it was due and there was a wait list, so I had to wait to get it back. I got it back. I finished it. Everything that I said previously about it holds true through the end of the book. It's good action thriller, you know. I mean the main character is a Secret Service agent. It's very much like Jack Ryan type storytelling. There's a lot of tropes, but overall it was good. I think there's more than a dozen books in this series. I will probably go back and follow up with some more of them, but I wanted to do something different and I wasn't quite ready to jump back into the next book in the Throne of Glass series. So, not Throne of Glass. Court of Thorns and Roses, ACOTAR. So I started thinking through some of the more classics that I might want to pick up at some point and went in a different direction. I decided to go with Stephen King. I haven't read a ton, but longtime listeners will know that I believe it was last year, maybe the year before, I read through all of the Gunslinger series. The only reason I've ever even really given Stephen King much of a try is Stephen King was always my mother's favorite author. So now I'm, you know, using Stephen King to help remember her. And I thought, you know, I never read The Stand. Let's give The Stand a try. I know this is a really long book, but I'm not sure how long the audiobook is going to be. This audiobook is 48 hours long. That's going to take a little while. But I'm excited to try it. I'm already three-ish probably hours in and enjoying it. This is one that I'm probably going to be talking about for a few weeks because it's going to take me a little while to get through it. This is a book that I'd considered a couple of years ago, but considering it's primarily about a really, really, really terrible pandemic that wipes out a massive percentage of the population, wasn't really a book I wanted to get into around, you know, 2020, 2021. Needed some time and separation from a real world pandemic before I jumped into Stephen King's interpretation of what a pandemic might look like, because it's Stephen King, you know, it isn't going to be pretty. So I will keep you updated on my progress through The Stand. But that's it for what's going on in my entertainment center. If you'd like to get a hold of us, leave us some feedback for a future episode. There are a bunch of ways that you can do that. If you're watching on YouTube, leave a comment right after you click that subscribe button. We read all of those and we'll respond to them on the show. Also, you can find us on socials. I'm at Josh Pollard on Twitter. The website is at DigiMediaZone. Richard and I are both on Mastodon, but Richard is only on Mastodon. He's at Richard Gunther. I'm at Josh Pollard. Especially once we get Richard back, we'll probably get back into the swing of doing live shows, typically 8:30 p.m. Eastern for those. Probably going to be, like, we will for sure be on Wednesday nights, at least for the next about a month, until I run my next half marathon. The training schedule is screwing up the podcast schedule, so that's why we've been on Wednesdays right now. But that's going to do it for episode 644. I'm Josh Pollard. Thanks for listening to Entertainment 2.0. Adios.